Good morning and welcome to CSIS. Thanks everybody for coming. I'm Charles Freeman. I'm the Freeman Chair in China Studies here at CSIS. This is a great pleasure for us as part of our ongoing commitment to making sure that Taiwan issues are front and center here in the policy community here in Washington. And we're delighted to welcome some very excellent panelists to talk about something that's been on I know many of our minds here, and that's the Taiwan elections coming up this spring and what it means for not just for Taiwan, but for also for the trilateral Taiwan-U.S.-China relationship. I again am delighted to take part in this project, in this series, not just as on behalf of CSIS, but working closely with the Center for Northeast Asian Policy Studies at Brookings, and also the Asian Studies Program at the Mortara Center for International Studies at Georgetown, represented ably by Nancy Bernkopf Tucker on my right, and the estimable Dr. Richard Bush on my far right. And I'll ask them to say a few words, and then we'll ask our panelists to speak from the podium. And Richard, if I can ask you, as the final speaker here on the introductory thing, to introduce our first panelist.
I wanted to add my welcome. This series, I think, is going to be a very interesting one. Clearly, today we're talking about the run-up to the legislative elections. On February the 21st, at Georgetown University in Copley Lounge, and we'll be putting out announcements, the Asian Studies Program and the Mortara International Center will be hosting the second in this series, and we will be talking about the results of the legislative elections and also a view forward towards the then rapidly upcoming presidential election. The third will be at Brookings, and Richard will say something in a moment. We hope that you will all make your way over to Georgetown. It's a little less accessible, but we're very warm and friendly. And it will be a full-day meeting there, a morning panel, a lunch, and an afternoon panel with a number of people that you know and have admired in the past. So please watch for those announcements.
Thank you very much, Charles, for making CSIS available as the venue for this first session. And thank you, Nancy, for being a partner in this effort. Brookings will be the host for the third session right after the presidential election, where we will take stock of everything that has happened. These elections, I think, are particularly important. Elections are always important in Taiwan and in any democratic system. They facilitate the rotation of leaders and the registering of the public's verdict on leaders' performance. In Taiwan this time, it's the LY elections in January are the first test of the new single-member district system for 73 of the 113 seats. We have both in the legislative and presidential elections the presence of referenda on the ballot, which at least in the March case are have become controversial. The results of the presidential election will probably have important implications for cross-strait relations. I tend to agree with the prediction of my good friend Steve Young last week when he said in Taipei that it will create the opportunity for the resumption of cross-strait dialogue. I certainly hope so. But I think that this election also, the two of them will create an opportunity for the Taiwan political system to address a number of weaknesses and create the opportunity for addressing the challenge of democratic consolidation, which is sorely needed. But we will, over the course of our three symposia, have a number of outstanding specialists talking about these issues. Today, we do have the first set of those outstanding specialists, and Shall I introduce all three, or just the first?
Go ahead and introduce all three.
Okay, that's what I thought the note was about. Okay. Leading off, we have Dr. Chung-Li Wu, who's an associate research fellow at the Institute of Political Science at Academia Sinica in Taipei. Second, we have Dr. Luo Zhizhang, who is chairman of the Political Science Department at Soochow University. And then third, Bonnie Glazer, who's a senior associate here at CSIS. So we'll start with Dr. Wu.
Okay, first of all, I got to say I'm more than happy to be invited to participate in this policy seminar. In order to save time, let me get down to business directly. For this policy seminar, I wrote a paper, so I bet you all have the paper at hand. So as the title shows, in this paper, I try to predict the 2008 legislative yuan election with a very simple model. Okay. Just as Richard just mentioned, this election is important practically and theoretically for at least two reasons, two good reasons. The first one is Taiwan has experienced electoral reform with the legislative yuan election, replacing the system of SNTV system with a new parallel two-ballot voting system. I will briefly introduce the new electoral system later. And also, this election is important because it is also commonly considered to be a prelude to the presidential election, which is scheduled on March 22nd next year. So in this paper, I separate into three sections. The first section is I briefly introduce the Taiwan's electoral system in the past and in the near future. The second part is I try to develop the research design and the measurement of this study. And the third section, I try to discuss the findings and the political implications. So in order to save time, I'm not going to go through the Taiwan's election system too detail. So anyone interested in this part, you can look at the page from page 2 to page 8. So in the past, since the use of the SNTV system, critics charged the SNTV system with some serious problem. For example, like stimulating the development of extreme political ideology, encouraging the formation of factional politics, weakening the border in the competition between political parties, facilitating candidate-centered electoral politics, and fostering the vote buying and black and gold problems. And the last one, is some advocate believe that the South Korea and Japan have already abandoned the SNTV system in 1988 and 1994. So only Taiwan still using the SNTV system. Therefore, it should be replaced as soon as possible. So go through a very complex procedure. Finally, the electoral system being passed in the National Assembly in years of 2005. And the electoral reform of the legislative yuan can be summarized as the following. The first one is reduction of the numbers of seats from 225 to 113, and the extension of the terms of the office from 3 to 4 years, adoption of the single-member district with two-barrel system in which voters can cast two votes, one vote for political parties to elect legislators for the national at-large district. That will be totally 34 seats. And then one vote to elect a legislator for single-member district. That will be totally 73 seats. And also two at-large districts with original SNTV system reserved for the Mountain Aborigines. There will be three seats, and out of mountains, three seats. So let me go to my research design and my measurement. This study tried to develop a forecasting model to estimate the result of the 2008 legislative yuan election, so including the single-member district, national at-large PR, and the Aboriginal district, respectively. So methodologically, I separate into three steps. The first one is I collect three-wave aggregate-level data, electoral data, released by the Central Election Commission, and then reallocate them to the current legislative electoral district, and then employ these figures as a reference to estimate the electoral strength of the two major political camps, including the pan blue and the pan green, in each individual constituency. And right here, by definition, the pan blue means the KMT plus the PFP plus MP and the Wu Dang Tuan Jie Lian Meng, MPSU. Since these four political parties has formally organized an electoral coalition for the election. And by definition, the pan green means the Democratic Party, Progressive Party, and the TSU. For the data be used in this model, for single-member district, I collect the data from the years of 2004 presidential election, 2004 legislative yuan election, and 2005 and 2006 local elections. For both national at-large and Aboriginal district, that will be including the 1998, 2001, and 2004 legislative yuan elections. And then this model is based on the two critical hypotheses. The first one is I always believe that the voting behavior of the Taiwan's general public, they tends to be identifiable and durable, and the stable partisan voting patterns exist both nationwide and district-wide. So along this argument, the logic for the election prediction is pretty simple and straightforward. In any given district, the more frequently a political party has won in the preceding elections, the greater is a probability of winning in the following election, and vice versa. And then the second hypothesis is based on the Duverger's law. Since the single-member district, according to Duverger's law, the single-member district with plurality system tends to favor a stable two-party system because of the mechanical and psychological effects. So, therefore, it becomes relatively much easier to predict the election outcomes under single-member district rather than that under single SNTV, since the SNTV always related to the numbers of nominees and the vote equalization. So all of the electoral information can be summarized. Actually, I summarized all of the electoral information in three appendixes. The first appendix take a closer look at the 73 single-member district. I should briefly introduce this appendix. The first one, this one is means a electoral district. And then the second column is the nominees nominated by candidates nominees by the Pan Blue, and this one is nominated by the DPP's nominee. And then that would be, if they have anyone, that would be TSU's candidate. And here means other independent and some minor political parties. And here's the data from 2004 presidential election. Here's a 2004 legislative yuan election. Here's a 2005 and 2006 local elections. And right here is the vote percentage received by the Pan Blue. Here's by the Pan Green. And you should look at this column. This second to the last column means the frequencies of the governing Democratic Party have won in the past three elections. So the logic is quite, you can look at this column. Actually, the figures range from 3 to 0. The score 3 and 2 imply the DPP nominees have good chances to win, while when 1 and 0 suggest the pen-blue candidates have the electoral advantage. And right here is all of the information about the 73 single-member district information. And right over here is a look at the nationwide at large district. And I tag average percentage of votes received by different political parties in the past three legislative elections. So if you're considering the 1998, 2001, and 2004 legislative elections, so KMT and PFB, generally, they have about 50% of the votes, and the DPP about the 34%, 33%, and then the TSU about the 7.8. Although so far they are more than a dozen of candidates left, but I think only have three tickets are viable, that is KMT and PFP, DPP and TSU. Even new party and the MPSU, they should be ineligible to get any seats from the PR seats. Okay, the next appendix will be for the Aboriginal districts. From this, we can find that KMT have approximately 88% of the vote, and the Penguin vote share maintained about 12%, although the percentage increased gradually. And then the next one could be the most important one, that is the predictive outcomes of the 2008 legislative Yangtze election. Of the totally 113 available seats, the KMT could have 71 seats of the election, including 48 single-member district, 18 PR, and five from Aboriginal district. The DPP have 39 and 25 from single-member district, 13 from at-large election, and one from Aboriginal district. And according to my calculation, TSU only have three seats from the PR. So if this prediction is somewhat inaccurate, so I can list, at least they have three political implications can be drawn from this electoral outcome. The first one should be the maintenance of divided government, at least until the next presidential election. Probably Professor Luo Zhizheng were talking about the divided government later. The divided government means the executive and legislative branches are controlled by different political parties. And over the past few years, divided government in Taiwan witnessed policy gridlock and the political stalemate, making responsible and efficient government almost on an attainable goal. And the second political implication will be the geopolitical gap between the North and the South. From the data, we will find DPP almost monopolized the election in the South, including Jiayixian, Jiayixi, Yunlinxian, Tainanxian, Tainanxi, Kaohsiungxian, Kaohsiungxi, and Pingdongxian. But only sporadically wins few seats in other regions. But on the other hand, the Pen Blue tend to control most of the seats in the north, in the middle, and in the east. So therefore, the geopolitical differences are consistent with the common impression about the geographical politics in Taiwan. That is, the north tends to support the Pen Blue, and the south support the Pen Green. I have a kind of feeling this kind of geographical gap might be a serious problem in the near future for Taiwan. Unless the last implication will be, the elimination of minor political parties. So far, although like TSU, New Party, and PFP, they try to advocate and appeal their former supporters to take the split ticket voting, but I don't think they have any good chance in this election. So some minor political parties might become politically insignificant after the election. Before closing, I got to remind everybody in this room, I do not think we can infer the outcomes of the next presidential election from those of the legislative elections, since they have a completely different electoral attributes. Thank you. That's my presentation. Criticism and comments are welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, distinguished panelists, ladies and gentlemen. It's an honor and privilege for me to be here to share with you some of my thoughts about the elections next year. And I'm not as bold as my colleagues is in terms of making predictions about the elections, but I will try to share with you my thoughts about some of the important aspects of the elections themselves and what are the possible implications of the election outcomes. Let me start with the answer. So what is at stake? I think, first of all, the political landscape for the next 8 years, or at least 4 years, will be determined by these two elections. And as we know, that the new electoral system we are going to have seems to have creating some sort of incumbent advantages. So whoever controls the majority in the LY will tend to have incumbent advantage in determining the political future of political parties in Taiwan. And more importantly, for the presidential election, whoever wins the next presidential election tend to have an incumbent advantage for another election. So I think the political landscape for the next 8 years will be determined by these two elections next year in spring. Secondly, Professor Wu pointed out that for the past 7 years or 8 years, we have a very difficult divided government situation. So whether we are going to end the divided government, I think I'm more hopeful that there will be end of the divided government in Taiwan, whoever wins the presidential election. Thirdly, I think there will be a lot of policy implications in terms of domestic politics. Are we going to continue our economic reforms, constitutional reforms domestically? Are we going to change our foreign policies? And are we going to modify our cross-strait policies? So there will be great policy implications as a result of these elections. Finally, we are going to have new leaders of our country. So we are hopeful that there will be a new chapter for cross relations and also the bilateral relations between Taiwan and the U.S. But again, let me give you some of the, I wouldn't say prediction, but some of the important aspects of the election. When you talk about LY election and the presidential election next year, there have been discussions about the impacts of one election on the other. So let me talk about the LY election's impacts on the presidential election. First of all, there have been discussions about the sort of swing effects or pendulum effects. In other words, whoever wins the LY election are going to have a bandwagoning effects or domino effects and create a momentum for the victory for the presidential election. That's the coattail effect. But there are also concerns that there will be a swing effect. In other words, whoever controls the LY will suffer from the presidential election because the voters will have a sympathy vote for the presidential election. Or people are hopeful that there could be a check and balance between the two branches of government. So there could be swing effects, and there could also be coattail effects. But most people in Taiwan predict that the KMT is going to have the victory in the LY election. And if that's the case, and if the swing effects take place, then the DPP is more likely to win the presidential election. And that is what presidential candidate Feng Shui is hopeful. In other words, there could be a swing effect as a result of LY victory on the part of KMT. But again, there are also concerns about domino effects bandwagoning effects. In other words, if the KMT wins big in the LY elections, and then everybody, especially local factions, will jump onto the KMT's bandwagon and dump the DPP candidates. So that could create some sort of disastrous effects on the DPP's chance of winning the presidential election. So the LY election will have very important impacts on the presidential election 2 months later. But how about the reverse, the impacts of presidential election on the legislative politics? First of all, we've been talking about a divided government in the past 7 years. And, people are hoping that after the presidential election, the new leader will be able to forge a new coalition government. In other words, if the KMT wins both the LY and the presidency, then they can easily become the dominant party in both branches of government. But even if the DPP loses the LY election, but if they can win the presidential election, then some people suggest that, some of the KMT members will defect from the party and jump onto the DPP's bandwagoning. In other words, the DPP president can also forge a new coalition government after the election. So I'm more hopeful that if after the presidential election, the president will be able to, whoever becomes the president in the next election, will be able to forge or create a party realignment in Taiwan's legislative politics. If that happens, and then we are going to a more stable, more unified government, and which I believe is more favorable for a more comprehensive policy making in Taiwan. So which election is more important? My personal view is that presidential election is more important than the LY election. I may not be wrong, but I may not be right, but that's my thinking. In terms of legislative politics and legislative elections in Taiwan, two important aspects we have to take into account. First of all, we are going to have a downsized LY. The current seats, number of seats for the LY is 225. And 2 years ago, we downsized it from 225 to 113. And that's a very important reform. Well, for better or for worse, but that's very important for in reform in Taiwan's electoral politics, especially legislative politics. Because are we going to have more accountability, transparency of the LY? Or are we going to have a more, you know, imperial, more influential lawmakers in the future? For instance, for now, we have about 14 committees. But if we do not downsize the number of committees, then we only need maybe about, you know, 10 or less than 10, about 8 lawmakers to participate in one committee. And if you need half of the votes to pass the law, then two or three lawmakers were able to influence the policy outcomes or law making. So individual lawmakers may become more important. But what about the checks and balances by the civil society, by the media, and so on? So there are concerns about whether we are going to a more efficient, more accountable, or more transparent lawmaking process. And there are also concerns that individual lawmakers will be more influential, which may not be good for Taiwan. You know, so that's the thing we are concerned about. Finally, the voter turnout. I have to say that this time, the campaign atmosphere seems to be very cold. You know, for the LY election, not for the presidential election, for the LY election. Last time, in year 2004, the voters turnout is only 59. Yeah. You know, it's very low, lowest ever. You know, but this time we are going to a new electoral system. But we don't know how voters turnout will be. But I think it will be, around 70, or not, around 65 to 70. You know, because people will be mobilized in different ways, such as referendum and so on. But that last time is very low. So voters turnout will have very important impacts on the prospects of the victory for each party. You know, traditionally, if the voters turnout is very high, it's good for the DPP. You know, but if the voters turnout is very bad, is very low, then it served the interest of KMT. And that's what happened last time. The voters turnout was so low, 59%, and the KMT had a landslide victory nationwide. So that's the legislative election first part. The second part is the new electoral system. As Dr. Wu pointed out, that we are going to have two votes, you know, single-member districts with two votes, one for the individual candidate and the other one for the party. And is KMT going to have a sure win? I'm not sure about that. It depends on how you define victory. You know, in terms of seats, number of seats, yes, the KMT is probably going to win in terms of more seats. But in terms of votes, I'm not sure about that, especially the second vote. Because this is the first time that people have the second vote to vote for the party. So we don't know how people are going to vote for their second vote. For instance, there have been suggestions for split voting. In other words, people are upset about the DAP's performance for the past 7 years, but they are not happy about the KMT as well, not as a loyal opposition party. So people may split their votes by voting for one party, by voting for different parties' candidates. So we don't know yet how people are going to vote for their second vote. But apparently, this election will be more competitive because two factors. First of all, in the old system, SNTV system, multi-member districts, the competition always seems to me always happens within the parties. So party members, the inter-party competition is more fierce than the inter-party competition. But this time, because of single-member district system, I think there will be more inter-party competition. Secondly, PR list. Because this time, you know, it's a zero-sum competition. So the inter-party competition in terms of the PR list or the legislature at large will be more fierce than ever. So apparently, the inter-party competition will be more competitive this time. So in the long run, are you going to a two-party system? Yes, in the long run. But how long? I don't know. But there will be a marginalization of smaller parties, especially in the elections or candidates from the districts. But in terms of the second vote, I'm not sure about that. You know, because there are, I think this time there are more than 15 parties competing for the second vote. You know, some parties like Green Parties or TSU, New Party, and so on. So I'm not sure the political fate of those smaller parties, but I think in the long run, there will be a two-party system in Taiwan. But overall, I think there will be an incumbent advantage for the major parties or the president. So how about the issues? I think all parties are local, and especially for the LY elections. And most of the legislative candidates are now competing against each other based upon their local interests. What kind of, you know, pokes and barrels they can bring back their districts. So many of the politics are now still, electoral politics are still very local. Secondly, economy. Yes, it's a very important issue, but it also depends on how you define the issue. For instance, some people suggest that we should have more closer links with the PRC, with the Chinese mainland. That's the only way that we can boost our economy. But there are also concerns that we are too much dependent on the China markets. So if we open up the market to the Chinese products and so on, we will lose jobs. You know, we will lose our competitiveness as well. So economy is very important, but the thing is that it depends on how you define the issue and how you frame the issue. Identity issue. You know, there's an increasing rise of the Taiwanese identity. And that is a very important issue, not in the LY election, but it will be a very important issue in the presidential election. Ethnicity is very bad, but unfortunately, it's a thing that's happening in Taiwan. So ethnicity, in some way, is an issue in Taiwan. Referendum, you know, it's been discussions about how this referendum issue can help or mobilize the DPP supporters. So referendum could be a mobilization mechanism for any particular party. Let me talk about political impacts of those elections. I don't want to predict the outcomes, but let me talk about possible political impacts of the election. First of all, we are going to have a new leadership. Okay, so the quality and the credibility of new leadership will be very important. And apparently, these two leaders, you know, especially presidential leadership, have very unique characters. You know, Ma Ying-jeou is someone who is, you know, who is very charismatic, you know, in many ways. Nice looking, very eloquent, very forceful in making his arguments. But he is someone being criticized for not being very firm on some of the reform issues. Yeah, he tends to take a more ambiguous position on many issues. In other words, he doesn't want to antagonize his diehard supporters, but he's trying to make appeal to the moderate supporters, such as light green supporters, light green voters. And that's the reason why he said that, you know, independence for Taiwan could also be an option for the people in Taiwan. But that creates some backfires in his own camp. Then he, you know, shifted a little bit. So whether he has a very firm position on some of the issues, that is something we have to pay attention to. Feng Shui as well, and he has been trying to move toward the center, but he has been criticized by his own hardcore supporters. And so far, he has been very firm on taking his positions. But there will be a, you know, opposition in his own camp in terms of his China policies. So his quality and his credibility of delivering, making policies, and these are things that we had to take into account. Secondly, end of divided government. As I said earlier, I'm hopeful that there will be an end of a divided government in the future. Why, as I said, if the KMT controls the LY and then wins the presidential election, then they have the unified government, for sure. But even if the KMT wins the LY election and the DPP wins, but the DPP wins the presidential election, I think DPP president will have much better, you know, chance to create a new coalition government, unlike what they had in the year 2000 and 2004. At that time, President Chen did try to reach out to the opposition camp to form a coalition government, but he could not do it simply because in the year 2000, some of the DPP members were not willing to defect the party because they believed they had a chance in the year 2004 to win back the presidency. So they did not want to defect from the party. In the year 2004, again, before that, the president tried to make to form a coalition government. He failed because many of the DPP KMT members still believed that they have a chance in the year 2004. But this time, if they lose the presidential election in year 2008, I think many of the KMT members will think they have no chance in year 2012 because they don't have such a superstar like Ma Ying-jeou. So it creates much better chance for Feng Shui to initiate some sort of party realignment after the election. So I think that would be the end of the divided government. And I think that is very important for Taiwan's policy making in the future. Future of Li Denghui and Wang Jinping. You know, I think, let me start with Wang Jinping. I think Wang Jinping enjoyed himself very much in terms of balancing between the green camp and the blue camp. And the speaker, you know, the speakership or the presidency of the LY gave him that kind of leverage in terms of balancing between the two camps. So I think he will pretty much, play as a balancer in these two camps. And Li Denghui, I think he's gone. You know, unfortunately, he's gone. And TSU, I think, will be gone. You know, I don't think they can take three seats. You know, but I think Li Denghui is disappearing from the scenes. And whether the issue here is whether a Chen Shui-bian will replace Li Denghui to consolidate his power in the dark green supporters. I don't know, but I think Li Denghui will be gone. Third force in Taiwan, the third party in Taiwan, I think there will be some smaller parties in Taiwan, but I don't think they will be that critical in tipping the balance between the two camps. But the overall phenomenon that we have to pay attention to is the rise of Taiwanese identity. And apparently, some people argue that the reason why we have a rising Taiwanese identity in Taiwan is because the DPP has been in power. So they cultivate or they help create a stronger Taiwanese identity. Yes and no. You know, yes, the DPP government has tried to cultivate the Taiwanese identity, but there is a natural trend of development of Taiwanese identity. I ask my students, you know, those people who were born after the lifting of the martial law in 1987. And then I asked them, are you Chinese, Taiwanese, or, you know, both? You know, and they respond by asking me, what kind of question is that? I'm Taiwanese, of course, you know. So for them, this is not a political concept, Taiwanese identity. It's more natural thing for them. But that could create a lot of political implications. Because we know that the One China policy, you know, framework by the U.S. government is that in 1972, the U.S. acknowledged Chinese position that Chinese on both sides of Taiwan Strait agree that there's one China and Taiwan is part of it. But the problem is that there's fewer Chinese in Taiwan. You know, so what kind of policy implication we are going to have for the U.S.-China policy? Finally, let me talk about policy implications. I think the new leadership in Taiwan will have different policy priorities. You know, and for the incoming presidents, cross-strait economic relations is a very important issue. But as I said, Feng Shui and Ma Ying-jeou seem to have similar policy orientations, but they do have different priorities. You know, for Feng Shui, his policy priority will be how to take care of his strong, long-standing supporters first. In other words, they call Sanzhong, you know, small and medium-sized, Zhong Nanbu, you know, central part of Taiwan, southern part of Taiwan, and the Zhongxia阶层, middle class and lower class. That's very important. And for Ma Ying-jeou, I think the KMT's policy has been more pro-business, control bigger enterprises and so on. So they tend to have different policy priorities. But overall, their policy proposals or policy prescriptions seem to converge some way or another. That is, they are hoping to have more open up policy towards the Chinese mainland. So I'm hopeful that there will be more chance for cross-strait talks. In other words, there'll be a better chance for the resumption of talks between the two sides of Taiwan Strait. And Taiwan's strategic choice, I think the both camps share the view that Taiwan should strengthen its ties with the U.S. So no problem about that. In other words, the partnership between Taiwan and the U.S. is very important, should be very robust, and that is the key to our security. But the two parties do differ some way, a little bit, in terms of how to increase Taiwan's security. Apparently, the KNT camp seems to believe that to initiate some sort of peace accord or framework between the two sides should be the best way to ensure Taiwan's security. So more rapprochement, détente, or peace talks with the PRC should be the best way to guarantee our security. But I think that for the DPP leadership, strengthening of some sort of virtual alliance with the U.S. would be the one they believe that should best serve our security interests. So, there will be an important transition in the U.S.-Taiwan partnership in the future. Let me start by making some concluding remarks. First of all, Taiwan's domestic politics is in transition. It's a new democracy. Everything is in transition. And the reform process will continue. For instance, legislative reform. As I said, that we are going to have a downsized LY with only 113 seats. But apparently, there is no healthy internal rules, seniority system now. How to function, how to have the better functioning of the committee system now. So we have to continue our reform in terms of legislative politics, electoral politics, and so on. For instance, we are going to a new electoral system. But how good is that system? We don't know. And are we going to expand the number of seats allocated to the PR list? For now, we're only 34 seats out of these 113 seats for the PR. Are we going to have more or less? We don't know. So there will be a continued reform in Taiwan. But I think there will be a new start for cross-strait relations. A new start for Taipei-Washington ties. For the past 7 years, there have been problems of credibility, trust, and so on. But I'm hopeful there will be a new start. So in general, I have more cautious optimism about the future prospects for these trilateral relations among Taiwan, Washington, and Beijing. Let me stop here. Thank you.
Well, if it's okay with you, I'm going to speak from here. I apologize for my lack of a PowerPoint presentation. My Taiwan colleagues are always about three steps ahead. I'm going to talk about the implication of the elections for the United States, talk about U.S. interests, and also talk more broadly about U.S. interests in Taiwan's democracy. First, I want to say that despite the contention of many on Taiwan and the mainland who I have talked to, the U.S. really has no horse in this in either of these election races. We don't have a preferred candidate for president, and we certainly don't have a preference for which political party has the majority in the legislative yuan. I often get questions from friends from both Taiwan and from China about who we want to see, what's better for the United States. I think we genuinely believe that these are choices that are best left up to the Taiwan people. And I believe that the United States has great confidence that the people of Taiwan, if given a fair and reasonable opportunity, will make the choices that are in their best interests. Ultimately, what we really care about is Taiwan making good policy choices, that is, whoever is elected or whoever is in in the majority in the legislature and in the minority that they would work together effectively. We care about Taiwan making good policy choices at home as well as in its policy toward the mainland and toward the United States, and then, of course, more generally in its foreign policy. As Richard Bush noted at the outset, I think really these elections, both the legislative elections and the presidential elections, represent first and foremost new opportunities, an opportunity for Taiwan to get beyond the competitiveness and polarization that we have seen in Taiwan politics over the last almost 8 years, certainly an opportunity in cross-strait relations to move beyond the stalemate that we have seen between Beijing and Taipei, particularly in the political realm, where there has been an absence of political dialogue for almost a decade, that is, any authorized political dialogue. Even in the economic realm, the progress that has been made has been somewhat limited, and so I think the United States hopes to see expansion of in economic and other forms of interaction between the two sides of the strait. On the U.S.-Taiwan front, I think it's clear that we very much hope for Lord Zhejiang used the term, a more robust relationship. I think we'd like to see a more smooth, a more trusting, and a more stable U.S.-Taiwan relationship. I think that many people in Washington have seen a pattern in which Washington is taken by surprise, in which U.S. interests are ignored and not taken into account in Taiwan's policymaking. And we have seen a pattern in which decisions are driven by domestic political needs rather than national interests. And I think that all of these have been very harmful to the U.S.-Taiwan relations. It would be interesting, of course, to talk more about what is necessary to make this relationship more robust and whether we all agree on that. If you you said, Lord Zhejiang, that both Xie Changting and Ma Ying-jeou want to see a better U.S.-Taiwan relationship. Do they define what is necessary for a good U.S.-Taiwan relationship in the same way that people in Washington do? I want to step back a little bit and talk about Taiwan's democracy and why it's important to the United States. I think people often lose sight of that. Obviously, the United States has many decades of close friendship with the people of Taiwan. We admire their achievements and their democratic progress. The U.S. has a special interest in both Taiwan's democracy and in the rule of law. And we would like to see these strengthened in Taiwan. Again, Richard referred to the need for further democratic consolidation, better democratic institutions. We want to see that Taiwan has a system that really provides genuine representation for its system, for its citizens, and one that holds its elected officials accountable for their actions. And so I think that this is we very much hope to see further development of Taiwan's democracy in the future. Obviously, the United States has an interest in the expansion of democracy and freedom around the world, including in the Asia-Pacific region. President Bush said in his APEC speech, he recalled that at the end of World War II, Australia and New Zealand were the only democracies on the other side of the Pacific. And in the years following, democracies flourished in Japan and in the Philippines, in Taiwan, South Korea, and Indonesia, and then in East Timor. It has been said by many that Taiwan can serve as a democracy, as Taiwan's democracy can serve as a model for other countries. And I think that our representative in Taiwan said this again just last week. Certainly, Taiwan can be a beacon for democracy on the mainland. But for this to be possible, Taiwan really has to improve its democratic institutions and its performance. I have found in my conversations with people on the mainland in recent years that many people have pointed to Taiwan not as a failed democracy, but as a reason why the PRC should not become democratic. And many people on the mainland who would like to see China become more democratic have been very disappointed in Taiwan's performance in democracy. Rather than promote democracy on the mainland, I think Taiwan has therefore reduced the interest of some on the mainland in becoming more democratic. And I think this is not what the U.S. hopes to see. It's also not what many of my friends who support democracy in China would like to see. An additional reason that the U.S. supports strong democracy in Taiwan is that if Taiwan's democracy is weak, it is more vulnerable to pressure from the mainland, and it is perhaps less likely then to engage in negotiations with the mainland. Obviously, the United States very much hopes to see a resumption of cross-strait dialogue and eventually a peaceful resolution of differences between the two sides of the strait. A strong Taiwan democracy not only serves the interests of the Taiwan people and the United States, but it has a place in the community of nations. Taiwan, although it often doesn't get much media attention or credit, is really a very important provider of aid, for example, in the field of disaster relief, especially in assisting victims of earthquakes. It's also a major provider of medical aid. It shares its experiences in disease prevention by training medical workers and donating supplies and equipment. Taiwan's government and NGOs are also active in providing humanitarian assistance to countries that are suffering in the aftermath of warfare, including refugee settlement. And although Taiwan is diplomatically isolated, it has been playing an important role in advancing the Millennium Development Goals. The U.S. obviously has a very strong interest in Taiwan's economic prosperity, and we believe that is fostered best in a democratic political system. We hope that Taiwan will choose both representatives and leaders that will ensure Taiwan's continued prosperity as well as the freedoms of its citizens. Turning specifically to the upcoming elections in the for legislature and for president that will take place next year, I think the United States has a very strong interest in what I would say is the Taiwan people's expectation for free and fair elections. This is especially important in the aftermath of the disputed elections in 2004. You know, we here in the United States remember our own disputed elections that we had in 2000. It was a very divisive moment, I think, in our country. And based on our respect for our Constitution and high regard for the rule of law, there was acceptance and respect for the decision that was made by our Supreme Court. In Taiwan, even though the election result in 2004 was validated, I think resentment and bitterness persisted and further polarized the society. So I think we hope that the 2008 elections will begin to mend these wounds, not further exacerbate them. The current controversy over how the voting should be conducted in the upcoming elections, whether they are one stage or two stage, how people will get their ballots and whether they will get them separately, and whether or not when they vote in the for the referendum, the mere receiving of a ballot will count as participation in the election. I think all of these have raised questions about the possible fairness of the upcoming legislative elections and potentially the March presidential elections. I think from the U.S. perspective, we hope that these concerns are addressed and the doubts about the fairness of the elections can be put to rest. It would be a tragedy if the outcome of the elections were such that they were deemed to be not valid or if one of the candidates or the other challenged them. I think discussions about declaring some of these votes invalid or even imposing martial law are really quite worrisome. After the January legislative elections, the U.S. hopes that various parties in the legislative UN can work together more effectively and with the administration in Taiwan to pass legislation that addresses the needs of the Taiwan people and improves the quality of governance. Many domestic problems clearly have been unaddressed in recent years. The politicization of virtually every issue has not served the interests of the Taiwan people. So I think we hope for greater accountability and for a greater bipartisan spirit. Analysts of Taiwan affairs have long ago pointed out that many of the problems in Taiwan's political system are structural. And if the political system is defective, then the opportunities for people to make good decisions are limited. Further democratic consolidation, again, as I said earlier, is needed. The changes in the legislative yuan election system can be the first step toward more effective governance, and we hope to see more. Finally, I want to say a few things about the March referendum, which has been so especially controversial, that is the DPP referendum, to join the United Nations under the name Taiwan. This has obviously caused a great deal of friction between the United States and Taiwan. It has also aroused a great deal of concern on the mainland. American officials have termed this referendum an effort to change the status quo. It has also been described as meaningless and unnecessary. This assessment is made independently from the PRC assessment. It is not just because American officials are listening to China's objections to this that we voice our concerns about it. Of course, at the same time, the United States can't ignore China's concerns because we do have a strong interest in peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. China has demanded that the United States take steps to stop the referendum. And I think here we can certainly say that this is unrealistic, and not only that, it is inappropriate. The United States can and has expressed its concerns both publicly and privately. But as U.S. officials have noted, that we do not dictate policy to Taiwan. That is not the kind of relationship that we have with Taiwan. But as a close friend with legal obligations that relate to Taiwan's defense, we do feel compelled to express our views, and we hope that our friends in Taiwan will take our concerns into account. I think the U.S. certainly has made it clear that we prefer that the referendum not be held. It is especially worrisome, in my view, that President Chun has publicly equated the referendum with a vote on unification. That is, that the people will have an opportunity to vote whether they want to unify or not, and that this is what potentially this referendum signifies. Obviously, in 2000, when President Chun was inaugurated, in the speech that he gave at his inauguration, he said that during his tenure he would not promote a referendum on unification or independence, nor change the title of the country. It seems increasingly clear that this proposed referendum is a violation of President Chun's public and private commitments. If the referendum proceeds, which I think at this point is likely, if it were to pass, it would be up to Taiwan's new president to decide how the result would be translated into policy. And I think this is a discussion that the United States needs to have with the presidential candidates before the elections take place in March. And I hope that that both sides will do some serious thinking and have some serious dialogue on it. Thank you.
Do we want to go to questions from the floor, unless you have questions that you want to ask? Let me open up questions from the floor. If you could raise your hand and stand, and when you're recognized, to introduce yourself and your affiliation. Michael Swain.
I'm Michael Swain at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. I'd like to ask Professors Law and Wu a question about the future, the post-elections future of Taiwan. If you assume that stability in Taiwan, in the Taiwan political process, is an important asset, and if you assume that moderation in Taiwan's policy towards the mainland and good ties with the U.S. are also an asset, what kind of outcome do you think would most serve those two main objectives for the Taiwan political process? Do you think such objectives would be best served by having, if let's assume the LY will go to the Kuomintang, the Pan Blue, do you think it would be best served by having a Kuomintang president in control with a unified government and presumably an effect on the DPP that would moderate the DPP because of this loss and having no control over either branch of government, that it would presumably alter the DPP towards moderation, it would provide a stronger basis for moderation, or do you think this would be better served if you had a DPP president, President Xie, who was a coalition president, who was able to actually bring in significant pan-blue membership into his government and therefore send a signal that this is a workable government despite the fact that the LY is under the Kuomintang's influence? Which of these two types of political processes do you think would better serve Taiwan's interests, or do you think there's a third route? Thank you.
No.
You go first, or? Yeah, after you.
I'm in favor of a coalition government, meaning Feng Shui wins the presidency and the Kennedy controls TLY. Because I believe that there will be some sort of check and balance between the two branches of government. And that could create more consensus, expanding consensus on Taiwan society. But one thing we have to take into account is the structural constraints on Taiwan. For the past 10 years, there have been elections every year. And from year 2000 forward, I think this is the first time we have some years without elections, because new LY members will serve 4 years, and the president will serve 4 years. So from then on, there will be no nationwide election for the next 3 or 4 years. So if that happens, if that's the case, then people can really sit down and talk rationally about policies without taking into account these kind of electoral benefits and so on. So I'm more hopeful that after the presidential election, there will be more serious debates about policies. And that serves Taiwan's interest. But if there could be some sort of coalition government, I think the president or the ruling party will have to, you know, make concessions some way or another. And I think that serves our interest. So that's my preference.
Okay. My answer is, this is a tough question. Actually, it is academically speaking, it is a kind of a debate. What kinds of government we need? It is kinds of efficient government or kinds of check and balances government. So I think no matter who win the legislative yin election or who win the presidential election, everybody got to sit down and do some compromise. That might be the best way to solve the problem. And my hunch is right now the divided government is not the worst case. The most worst scenario is the KMT win the presidential election, but the DPP control the majority of the legislative yin case. That won't happen in this time. Thank you.
Thank you. It's on? Okay. I'm Joanne Thornton. I'm with the Stanford Group Company, and I'm less educated about Taiwan than everyone here, I'm sure, so I apologize. But did you mention that there would also be a referendum question associated with the legislative elections, and what is the referendum in the legislative elections? Thank you.
Quickly, two election bills. One would be on the KMT's party assets. In other words, the referendum bill is initials that whether the LY should pass a law, you know, dealing with KMT's party assets. You know, a second one is sort of anti-corruption referendum. You know, whether the LY should pass a law dealing with the corrupt leaders, blah blah, and so on. So, two referendum bills.
Jacob Chen from KMT PAP office here in Washington, D.C. I try to be objective. I want to ask a question. Yeah, thank you. It seems to me that we all place a great confidence or emphasis on Frank Xie's ability to form a coalition government. I mean, coalition government. But if my memory serves me right, when he was here in July, he didn't talk about coalition government. He talked about coalition in LY. So could any one of you enlighten us, what does Frank Xie mean by coalition government or just a coalition in LY? I really have to wait and see what does he mean in his heart. Thank you.
I think coalition on both fronts, LY and the government as well. I think his experience in Kaohsiung City is very important because his party did not have majority seats in the city council. But he's the mayor that can really implement policies by forging some sort of cooperation from the opposition camps in the city council. That's the reason why he's so confident that after he is elected, he will be able to forge a similar, some sort of cooperation, coalition in the LY and also bring some people from the opposition camp to serve in the government. So I think both fronts will be possible for him to solicit some cooperation from the opposition camps.
John Zan with CTI TV, Taiwan. Suppose the Pan Blue wins the LY, and would it be more in the U.S. interest to have a President Xie or a President Ma? thank you. This question is Bonnie.
Directly.
I've already answered that, John, and I'm not going to say anything in addition to what I have said. The U.S. will work with whoever the Taiwan people elect as president. We don't have a preference. We care about their policy choices. I'm not trying to be a government spokesman. I mean, I honestly feel that the United States has, we have great confidence in the people in Taiwan to make these choices. And if they don't make good choices or if they're not given the opportunity to make that fair and reasonable choice, that's a problem we're going to have to deal with too. But it doesn't make much sense, I think, to sit around and think about what we prefer or what we don't prefer. We really do care about policies that support peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait, policies that are in the interests of the Taiwan people, and particularly in the interests of keeping Taiwan's economy strong. And so I think that from a scholarly, objective point of view, that is what we care about.
Hi, Nadia Chow, Washington correspondent for Liberty Times. I have two questions. One is from the friends from Taiwan. We still see, you know, President Chen is very active, even though he's outgoing president. What do you think his recent, you know, actions and statements, any impact on Frank Xie's, you know, elections? Second question for the friends from the U.S. We saw President Hu Jintao made some reconciliate remarks during the 17th Party Congress, but also we see a lot of people visiting Washington sending strong message or even warning regarding the referendum issues in Taiwan. So if both a referendum or even one of them passed in next March, what would you expect the reactions from Chinese? Thanks.
The president has been very active. President Chen has been very active in running a campaign. And some people have been saying that whether Frank Xie has been marginalized some way or another. But I think that is before the legislative election. In other words, I think Frank Xie will be more active after the LY election. Because for now, Frank Xie has been distant himself from the LY election. It will be the president's show to run the campaign, because the president is the chairman of the party. So he's running on behalf of the party for the LY election. He's very active. But after LY election, I think Frank Xie will be more active than ever in running his own campaign. So we have to wait and see whether President Chen would continue to take to Frank Xie's policy agenda. But I would say that after the LY election, Frank Xie, the real presidential campaign will begin after the LY election. And Frank Xie will be the one who is running his own show. But after election, I think Frank Xie will have less constraints than ever. Because so far, many of the so-called hardcore green supporters have been very critical of Frank Xie. And they've been criticizing him for too moderate on some of the key issues. But they have been complaining that if we cannot constrain Feng Shui during campaign, how can we constrain Feng Shui after the election? So apparently Feng Shui will continue on his own agenda after the election. And I don't think that President Chen will stop him from doing that, you know, unless President Chen can be able, is able to, you know, control certain seats in the LY. You know, otherwise, he will not be that influential. The very reason why President Lee, former President Lee, can be influential in affecting the DPP's policy is because he controls the TSU. You know, if President Chen, President Lee, does not have TSU, he will be nobody. You know, and same can be said about President Chen. So he has to run very heavily, you know, strongly for the LY members. If he can continue to control some of the LY members, then he has some power, real power, to influence Feng Shui's policies. And so I think there's a division of labor between Feng Shui and President Chen so far. And whether that kind of division of labor will become division between the two leaders, I don't know. But I think there will be continued cooperation between the two leaders because these two leaders are on the same boat. They are on the same boat. President Chen cannot afford to lose the election. You know, he will not sabotage candidate Xie's chance for winning the election. Because if the DPP loses the presidential election, you can see how the KMT will treat President Chen. You know, so he has to make sure that his party's candidate can win the presidential election. So they are on the same boat. So I don't think that he's dragging Feng Shui's feet. He is now active in helping his party to win the LY election.
President Chen, he is quite active recently, and I have a conspiracy theory. Actually, they are playing a bad cop and good cop game, and he playing a radical role and let the Feng Shui to play a much more moderate role in the electoral process. And what kinds of impacts of President Chen were on Feng Shui? I would say it would depend on the election outcomes of the LY. If the DPP can control over 50 seats in this, in this election, that means that, the Chen Shui-bian's influence will continue, and Feng Shui still will be constrained by the Chen Shui-bian. But if my model, of course, in that case, it means my model is wrong. But if my model is right, it means that KMT only control about 40 seats. That means I suspect the Chen Shui-bian's influence on Feng Shui will decreasing pretty soon. Thank you.
Can I have a very short note?
Go right ahead.
No problem.
First of all, when you talk about the victory or the electoral outcomes of LY, two things. One is the seats and the other one is the votes. Especially the second vote is very important. Because when we talk about the swing effect or the domino effects, I think the second vote is more important than the first vote. Because people vote for the candidates for different reasons, variety of reasons. Maybe he's my family members or whatever, I don't know. But the second vote is the party identity, party ID, party loyalty. So if the DPP continues or manage to win more than 40% of the votes, I think the momentum is still there. And the DPP can continue to push the momentum and win the presidential election. But if the DPP, you know, win by only 30-something percent or even 20% of the party votes, then the DPP will be in trouble. Because people will sense that the DPP is losing the momentum, so it's better for us to jump out of the seat and then jump onto the KMT's bandwagoning. So the second vote is very important. And that's the reason why the referendum is so critical to the DPP. Because the DPP used the momentum to mobilize their traditional strongholds in the South. Anti-KMT, anti-KMT assets, party assets, voters. So, you know, that's the reason why they are combining the referendum issue with the election. Because that's the one way to show the people that I'm different from the KMT. So maybe you support the KMT in terms of individual candidates, but suppose because we are going to deal with the KMT's party assets. So, you know, that's my reading of the victory of the LY election.
China's reaction. First, let me say it is not surprising that China has been sending very tough messages to the United States. In 2004, China was able to exert some influence through the Kuomintang, which was not holding a referendum in the 2004 elections, and opposed the DPP's referendum. In this case, we have a KMT referendum, both in the legislative elections and in the presidential elections. And I think that China's first hope, the first sort of line of defense, as one might refer to it, is its supporters on the island, people from the KMT. And so that option, I think, is really limited this time around. Secondly, China has recognized that anything that it does, particularly in the realm of very tough rhetoric or increasing military exercises opposite Taiwan, can have a very counterproductive impact, and we have seen this in the past. So my sense is that China is sitting on its hands, wanting to react, but dares not to. Therefore, clearly the message to the United States is we have to look to you, so please do more. That will certainly be true, I think, through the elections. My hope is, I would certainly ask Richard to add to this because he has just returned from the mainland as well as from Taiwan. But my hope is that China would wait to see first what the outcome of this vote is, the votes on for the legislative elections, for presidential elections, and of course for the referendum, and see how the new president is going to interpret this referendum, the DPP referendum, if it passes, if it is a DPP president. And that, of course, is, I think, what China describes as the biggest challenge is the victory by, possible victory by Xie Changting and the passage of this DPP referendum. And so I think the important thing for the mainland is how the new leader in Taiwan, whoever that may be, interprets the possibility of this the referendum passing if it does. I don't think there's any certainty that China is going to feel a need to react very strongly. But they are certainly hoping that we will see a different scenario, that it will be either a KMT victory and both referendum being defeated, or a KMT victory and one or two of the referendum passing. The best scenario, I think, from the mainland's point of view, is that both referendum pass and that that Ma Ying-jeou is elected. That'd be fail. I'm sorry. That's what I was. Thank you, Alan. We'll both fail, and that Ma Ying-jeou is elected. It gets too convoluted. Thank you.
I would just like to reinforce that. First of all, I totally agree that Beijing does not want to put itself in the position where it can be portrayed by forces on Taiwan as a bully, because that leads to an outcome in the election that it doesn't want to see, or it might. Second, although I agree that President Hu Jintao's passage concerning Taiwan in his report to the 17th Party Congress was sort of milder than most of us were expecting, I mean, he did warn about the danger of separatist activities. I mean, he didn't sort of ignore that. Third, I agree wholeheartedly with Bonnie that a key issue here is how the referendum, the DPP's UN referendum, is interpreted, both before the election, but particularly after the election, by President Chun, by Frank Xie, if he wins. That's something that they're watching very carefully. There's another issue here, and that is the significance of referenda in general as a tool of government. Do you want to follow on that?
Let's ask.
Okay.
Thank you. Harvey Feldman, Heritage Foundation. Listening to the remarks of these most recent remarks of our three presenters reminded me of something. This is not a question, just an observation. And that is that Chen Shui-bian will remain president for 2 months following the March 22nd election. And those 60 days could be interesting.
Jay Lin from CNA Taiwan. I have one question for all three panelists. Which issues will dominate the campaign in the last stage? We know that the KMT says the economic issues, but the DPP side continue to mobilize the national identity issues. And which one or other issues will dominate the campaign? And what if all three panelists point out the issues and what the issue will affect the result of the election? Thank you.
That is my point of view. So far, the KMT tried to play the economy, but to the end of the election, I still two critical issues. The first one, it will be the China issue. Another one, still the ethnicity, Mainlanders versus Taiwanese, and they will try to emphasize Ma Ying-jeou's origins of Mainlander, and then Frank Shea represent the Taiwanese interests. Thank you.
Well, if you ask who's going to win, I think the one who can successfully define the agenda has a better chance to win. Secondly, the one who makes few mistakes is more likely to win. You know, so apparently, KMT, the DPP has been very good at setting the agenda. You know, from the experience we had in the past, so far they are still very successful in putting the issues such as referendum and so on in defining what is most important issue for Taiwan. But the KMT has been dragged into that kind of arena or battlefield that they are not familiar with. I think the referendum, a UN membership bid, is a good case in point. So they try to distance and deviate themselves from that kind of difficult situation, but I think they have been dragged some way or another into that kind of battleground. And I think eventually identity issue will be the issue for the presidential election. And I wouldn't say ethnicity, but I think identity issue will be the issue. And the China factor as well, you know. But more importantly, I think the character issue, you know, especially for Ma Ying-jeou, his character has been attacked by the DPP. And there will be all kinds of accusations of being a spy or blah, blah, and so on. Those kind of issues will continue to be brought up, really. I don't think that is not an issue. I don't think that is not an issue. Because eventually people will say that, are you going to vote for someone who used to be a spy and autophiles and so on? I think for some people that is controversial. It may be not moral, but I think that would be an issue that would be, you know, being brought up, you know, in the final week of the election. And on the Ambassador Feldman's argument about your observation about sometime between March and May 20th, I don't think that President Chen will have that kind of legitimacy to say or do something in between, because everybody will pay more attention to the incoming president than the outgoing president. Yes, for instance, when he said that he's going to thinking about imposing a martial law, look at what happened. You know, backfires in the society and criticism and so on. So he will lose his legitimacy after the March election. So whatever he said or does, I think people will take that as a joke or whatever. I don't know. But the thing is, don't overreact to President Chen's, you know, actions after the March election. But I'm afraid that there could be rooms for miscalculation and misunderstanding. I think so far Beijing has been overinterpreting, or they give too much credits to President Chen's statements. Martial law, yeah, that's a serious issue. But the thing is, in Taiwan, we just take that as a joke, you know. But Beijing leaders should tend to pay too much attention, credits to President Chen's policy proposals or whatever he says.
Well, go ahead.
First, I would say that for any leader of any country to make any democracy in particular to talk about martial law and expect that anybody is going to interpret that as a joke is problematic. And I am not surprised that Beijing is concerned about it, and my understanding is that the U.S. is concerned as well. I think our Deputy Assistant Secretary spoke to this issue with the reporters last Friday. I just wanted to add one other additional issue that I have heard from friends of mine and in the DPP that will be discussed during or played up during the campaign. And that is the comparison of the performance of Xie Changting and Ma Ying-jeou in their previous capacities as mayors. And the DPP believes that Xie Changting has a better track record that in his governance. And so this is something that they plan to promote as part of the campaign because they think that that can help win support for Xie as better at effective governance than Ma Ying-jeou.
Just a quick comment. It should be acknowledged that we're all speculating here. There is an important school of political science, and there's an important school of political practice that says defining the agenda is everything. But there are also currents of political sentiment in Taiwan that actually this time may be immune to the games of agenda setting. And we'll see.
Thank you. Alan Romberg, the Stimson Center. For Lawyer Deng, I'd like you to balance the sheet a little bit here. You talked about what character issues may be raised against Ma Ying-jeou. What character issues might be raised with Xie Changting?
He is too religious in some way.
He meditates too much.
Yeah, he meditates too much, you know. So there have been some criticisms about his religion. You know, he's so religious, some people think that if somebody, master, said that, you know, eventually Taiwan will blah, 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 and so on, so he should follow. So that's the thing that people so far have yet to raise. And I think that will be raised eventually in the presidential election.
I'm actually going to exercise my prerogative as the chair here to ask the last question. Apologies for those of you. Just the use of referenda and Richard alluded to it. Is this as a tool of government? Is this something that is a phenomenon of the Chen Shui-bian presidency, or is this something that is likely to be something that will continue in Taiwan politics from here on in? The going to the people phenomenon.
I think yes, that would be a fake of life in Taiwan. In other words, there will be more and more referendum in Taiwan, so just get used to it. But the thing is, I don't think a good leader, should count simply on referendum for the policy making. But I think it's a new democracy. I think people in Taiwan begin to enjoy the democracy, and they do believe that. Let me tell you this way: the reason why people are so sick and tired of the LY and downsizes because they don't think the LY members are doing a good job. So they want to take back their power and then initiate policies and so on. But as long as if the LY members can do better jobs, I don't think that people will say that we should do it ourselves. So that's a, you know, chicken and egg problem. So eventually, if the LY can do a better job, and then we can be more efficient, more transparent, more accountable LY, then I think people will give back their power to the LY members. So that's a vicious cycle. But if I may add one more point to the Beijing's perspective on the whole situation, I think, yes, they prefer that Ma Ying-jeou to be elected and the two referenda not to be passed, yes. But I think they are quite realistic in terms of prospects for cross-strait relations. And I talked to one of my colleagues in China, and he responds by saying to me that, you know, the cross-strait relations between the two sides, yes, will be affected by the new leadership. But if Ma wins the election, the cross-strait relations may not be better. But if Feng Shui wins the election, the cross-strait relations may not be worse. Let me say it again. If Ma wins, it may not be better. And Xie wins, it may not be worse. Why? I ask him the logic. If Ma wins, and then how will the DPP react to the victory of Ma Ying-jeou? Because it will tell the traditional Green supporters that this kind of conciliatory policy by Fengxue is not winning. So we should be firm on the Taiwan identity, blah, blah, and so on. But if, so there will be a strong constraint domestically on Ma's policies towards the mainland. But if Fengxue wins the election, then Fengxue can tell his supporters that my moderate policy, my conciliation policy helps me win the election. Then Fengxue can be bold enough to push for more moderate policies and so on. So, you know, maybe it's wrong, but, you know, that's one different thought that we can share, that I can share with you. Thank you.
Just a few words. Several years ago, I read a book. The title of the book is Going Public. It's describing the American president trying to appeal his policy to the general public. Actually, Taiwan just followed up American way. I mean, the president tried to got to go in public. Another thing for Beijing's government, my suggestion is their reaction. The best reaction of the Beijing government is no reaction. That's my suggestion. Thank you.
Well, on behalf of CSIS, Georgetown and Brookings, I want to please join me in thanking our panel.